Now, I heard our president say, "This tour was the best tour ever." It's all, of course, a matter of perspective, and of course, I'm glad that it was a good tour since he went on the tour. Anyway, welcome to the NCCB Talent Time. We have 17 entrants. And we're going to start off, we're going to start off wise. we hope we put them together, this talent time together in a wise order. Okay. Sandy is back with us this year from California. David brought her along. How long has it been since you've been to conference, Sandy?
11 years.
My goodness. Well, she's going to come and read a poem for us. Oops. Hello? I'm going to do a poem for you, and it's called, "We Are Washed in the Blood of the Lamb." We are washed in the blood of the Lamb, accepted in his newfound plan, nailing our sins to the cross. No longer Satan is allowed to be boss, guilty not of our sin. By God's power, temptation, we shall not give in, knowing he loves us with all of our might, looks upon us holy and blameless. Looks upon us holy and blameless in his sight, as we choose to live in his grace. All failure we can face. We are on our way of being sanctified. God himself abides, loves, and guides. He calls us his bride, and soon we will meet him on the other side.
Very good.
She didn't tell you this, but she wrote the poem. Thank you, Sandy. Our next person also comes from the West Coast. Robin Gibbs is going to come and sing a solo for us.
Are you tired of chasing pretty rainbows? Are you tired of spinning round and round? Wrap up the shattered dreams of your life, and at the feet of Jesus, lay them down. Give them all to Jesus. Shattered dreams, wounded hearts, broken toys. Give them all to Jesus, and he will turn your sorrow into joys. He never said you'd only see sunshine. He never said there'd be no rain. He only promised a heart full of singing about the very things that once brought pain. Give them all to Jesus. Shattered dreams, wounded hearts, broken toys. Give them all to Jesus, and he will turn your sorrow into joys, and he will turn your sorrows into joys. And I heard a song on K-Love Radio, just the chorus, so it's not going over our 1X scripture here, and I thought, oh, it goes beautiful, that piece. I wasn't sure of the title, but an educated guess would be Give Them All to Jesus by Evie Tornquist Cost. And here is this Chris Rice. I thought it dovetailed beautifully in. Come to Jesus, sing to Jesus, dance for Jesus, and live. Fall on Jesus, fly to Jesus, run to Jesus, and live. Fly to Jesus, and live. Maranatha, and God, wrap your loving arms around all the rest of the worshipers in this talent program tonight. Amen.
Thank you, Robin. Our next person didn't have so far to come. It isn't too far from Michigan to Indiana, anyway. Dory Mates is going to come and sing a solo for us.
Tell me when, folks. Okay. No problems.
I have to tell you a real short story before this song. Bob and I were on our way to Baltimore, Maryland, and it was a 35-hour train ride. And we took 5 different trains coming and going, but on the way, the attendant asked a couple to move, and I wanted to say thank you, and I asked him what their favorite hymn was. So she said, "His Eyes on the Sparrow," and I sang it. And I heard her crying, and I was really worried about that. And I said, "Why are you crying?" And she said, "Well, that was my dad's favorite song, and we're on our way to bury him tomorrow." And I didn't know what to do. I was just, I said, "Lord," and she says, "Would you mind singing it again so we can tape it on our phone?" So you never know how the opportunity is going to come. And may the Lord use this song again tonight. His eye is on the sparrow, and he's always watching us.
Why should my heart
Don't go away.
I'm not going away. Look in the book.
Because now Dory and I are going to sing a duet. Now I belong to Jesus. Let's see. What key did I decide?
Does this look even okay?
What key should
I? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
We're not going to do it over.
No.
Okay.
It's done, okay.
We had it on the microphone near you.
Okay, now we're going to hear from Mr. Paul Smith. He's brought his saxophone, as we heard the other night at the hymn sing, and he's going to play something for us without accompaniment. You call that a cappella when it's an instrument also? No, I know, I'm just asking, is it, when it's an unaccompanied instrumental solo, do you still call it a cappella?
I think that's right.
Okay, well, that's what I thought, but.
Okay, are we on the air?
Yeah.
Good. Now I realize that most of this stuff we're doing is Christian, and this is not Christian, but there is an Indiana with a Christian connection. Up in northern Indiana, especially in Franklin County, there are substantial pockets of Amish and Mennonites who belong to the Swiss Brethren, as opposed to the Pennsylvania branch, which are Rhineland Palatinate. And as a humble homage to their culture, I'm going to play a Swiss Schottische, which has a lot of skill involved with it, and I'm afraid I may make some mistakes, but I hope you'll forgive the mistake. I don't know the name of this song, but here it is.
Thank you, Paul. I'm trying to remember to tell where everybody is from. You're from Maryland, is that correct?
I guess I am. I got a chat.
Okay. All right. Our next person that we're going to hear from is Hal Burdick. We heard a devotional from him last night. He comes to us from Kansas City. Is it Kansas City, Missouri? Okay, and Hal has a reading to share.
Tonight I have several readings. First one is Eulogy on the Dog. The best friend a man has in this world may turn against him. and become his enemy. His son or daughter, who he has reared with loving care, may prove ungrateful. Those who are nearest and dearest to us, those whom we trust with our happiness and our good name, may become traitors to their faith. The money that a man has, he may lose. It flies away from him, perhaps, when he needs it most. A man's reputation may be sacrificed in a moment of ill-considered action. The people who are prone to fall on their knees to do us honor when success is with us may be the first to throw the stone of malice when failure settles its cloud upon our head. The one absolute, unselfish friend that man can have in this selfish world, the one that never deserts him, the one that never proves ungrateful or treacherous, is his dog. A man's dog stands by him in prosperity and in poverty, and in sickness and in health. He will sleep on the cold ground where the wintry winds blow, and the sun drives fiercely, if only he can be near his master's side. He will kiss the hand that has no food to offer. He will lick the wounds and sores that come in encounter with the roughness of the world. He guards the sleep of his pauper master as if he were a prince. When all other friends desert, he remains. When riches take wings and reputation falls to pieces, he is as constant in his love as the sun in his journey through the heavens. If fortune drives the master forth, an outcast in the world, friendless and homeless, the faithful dog asks no higher privilege than that of accompanying him to guard against danger, to fight against his enemies, and when the last scene of all comes, and death takes the master in its embrace, and his body is laid away in the cold ground, no matter if all other friends pursue their way, there by his graveside will the noble dog be found, his head between his paws, his eyes sad but open, in alert watchfulness, faithful and true even to death. The second reading I have here, if you recall, in Reader's Digest, they used to have humor in uniform. Here's a couple of those things that were printed. As part of combat training, we were made to crawl on our backs under barbed wire while rounds were being fired above us. The training instructor continually screamed at us to get down. Near the end of the exercise, the TI shouted to one soldier, "Why aren't you crawling lower?" "Because," the trainee said, "my skin keeps getting in the way." Just before our first long deployment, two Navy buddies and I were talking about the stress of leaving our family. A senior officer, a veteran of many deployments, overheard our conversation. "You must be sensitive to your wife's emotional needs," he said. "Never ever whistle while you pack." And the last reading then was printed in Ann Landers a number of years ago in the Kansas City Star. And the whole thing here has to do with a article in the Massachusetts Bar Association Lawyers Journal. They printed the following questions actually asked of witnesses during the trial. The responses to some of the questions were given by an insightful witness. This is the way they spoke. Now, doctor, isn't it true that when a person dies in his sleep, he doesn't know about it until the next morning? The youngest son, the 20-year-old, how old is he? Next question, were you present when your picture was taken? And the next one here, were you alone or by yourself? Next question, was it put you or your younger brother who was killed in the war? Did he kill you? Another question. How far apart were the vehicles at the time of the collision? And here is one. You were there until the time you left. Is that true? Question. She had three children, right? Answer, yes. How many were boys? None. Were there any girls? The question, you see the stairs went down to the basement. Yes. And these stairs, did they go up also? Next question. How was your first marriage terminated? By death. And by whose death was it terminated? Question. Can you describe the individual? He was about medium height and had a beard. Was this a male or a female? Question. Is your appearance here this morning pursuant to a disposition notice that I sent to your attorney? No, this is how I dress when I go to work. And the question here, doctor, how many autopsies have you performed on dead people? Answer, all my autopsies are performed on dead people. The next question, all your responses must be oral, okay? What school did you go to? Oral. Question, do you recall the time that you examined the body? The autopsy started around 8:30 p.m. And the question then, and Mr. Dunnigan was dead at the time? And the answer, no, he was sitting on the table wondering why I was doing an autopsy. The next question here, Mr. Slattery, you went on a rather elaborate honeymoon, didn't you? I went to Europe, sir. And you took your new wife? I guess that's the answer. And the next question, so the date of conception was August 8th? Yes. And what were you doing at the time? Here's a question, are you qualified to give a urine sample? He says, I have been since early childhood. And here's one I really like. The question is, you were not shot in the fracas? And the answer was no, I was shot midway between the fracas and the navel. I guess that's it.
You know, when people come and tell me that they're going to do a reading or a poem, they don't usually tell us if it's humorous or serious or what it is. And so then when we put the order of the who's going to follow whom, you know, sometimes it's hard to follow something like that. But I think Rick is up to the challenge.
Yeah.
And he's going to sing a solo for us.
Would you rather stand at the podium to hold on to it, Rick?
No, this is fine.
Okay, I just have one question, though, before you sing. Two or one?
We can raise that up for you, Rick. You want to raise it up?
You want me to sing? Do you want me to sing?
Yeah, raise it up.
Behind you?
You don't need that.
Three.
Do you want me to sing behind you?
I'm going to try not to.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm pretty nervous in doing this, but I know the Lord's going to be with me. I haven't done something like this in a long time, and I appreciate the encouragement to be doing it. The song I'm going to be doing is a song that's near and dear to my heart, and it's near and dear to a lot of people's hearts, but it's a song that was sung at my dad's funeral. It was sung at my mom's funeral and sung at my sister's funeral. And I want it sung at mine as well, because it's a song that's near and dear to me, and it goes back to my origin, because it's a Swedish hymn. And I'm going to do the best I can, and we'll go for it from there. Children of the Heavenly Father. God is own, doth tend and nourish. In his holy courts they flourish.
From all evil,
when he spares them,
in his mighty
arms he bears them. Though he giveth or he taketh, God his children ne'er forsaketh.
Is the loving
purpose solely
to
preserve them pure and holy. I'm sorry, I forgot something. I was doing pretty well back in the room.
Yeah, it's and, me here in the room.
It's my memory, and I'm trying to rebuild it, and that's why I thank Lorraine for asking me to do it, because it helped try to build me up. And thank you, Lorraine, for backing me up. There.
Thank you, Rick. That was great. Now we're going to, Rick is from California, as you know, and we're going to stay in California for our next entry, I guess we'd call it. Brian and Denise Alberton are new to us this year, and as I understand it, he's going to play guitar and she's going to play an auto harp, and they're going to sing for us, and I'll let them announce their number.
Guitar tackle poke in the
slide.
name of this song is 50 Miles of Elbow Room. Don't you wish you had that kind of room on the airplane?
I settled for 50 inches. All right.
Tell them what you're playing, Denise.
Oh, yes. We have Brian's on the guitar, and I have an auto harp, and also a harmonica. I have one of those, you know, those things you wear around your neck, and it holds the harmonica, so you have to adjust it back and forth.
That's why she's my better half. She plays two instruments.
Should have got a hand for that little interlude. That was great. Didn't she do a good job? Oh, they both did, but my goodness. Okay. Are they still? Oh no, that's all right. I didn't bring any jokes to tell. Okay. All right. Pardon? Okay. Our next participant is Martha Moser, and she is here from Philadelphia.
a reading tonight that is just, well, it's kind of funny, but it's also true of those of you who have trouble seeing, let's say. And those of you who don't have trouble seeing, think about this. This originated from Nottingham, England. It was forwarded to Duncan Holmes, who sent it out in an attachment to many of the people on his prayer list. And this is called The Mystery of Over There. Over there, as my guide dog and I stood in line at the checkout of the market, I asked the cashier what I considered a simple question. Where are the napkins, please? Her response was hurried but sincere. Over there. Another time, emerging from the rail for the first time, I managed to catch the attention of a passerby. Please, sir, can you tell me where I might catch bus 63? A kind voice offered a pleasant response before disappearing into the crowd. You can catch it over there. So many things reside over there. Napkins, bus stops, pencils, pens, clothing racks, department stores, and even my shoes. A never-ending supply of important and indispensable items and locales all reside in this place, which is shrouded in mystery. I stand in perplexed silence after learning that something is over there. It is a place I've never been and have no hope of finding it on my own. My guide dog is quite skilled at finding chairs, stairs, elevators, escalators, helping me cross streets, and can even find the Diet Pepsi display. However, when I tell her to find over there, her little bottom hits the floor, and a small whimper tells me that she is as confused as I. We will not be going over there today. Over there has caused me a lot of vexation, a lot of confusion, and on occasion made my heart ache. Close encounters with over there can be frightening experiences, although many blind people have wondered as to the exact location of over there. Few have dared to venture forth in an actual exploration of that mysterious place. One day, while standing in line at the supermarket, I asked the clerk where I might find the aspirin. With a cheery smile on her in her voice, she informed me that the aspirin was located over there. With a weary sigh, I decided I would take the extra step that would unravel the mystery, which had vexed my compatriots since the beginning of time. Taking a deep breath, attempting to look nonchalant, I smiled at the clerk and I said, "Where is over there?" I imagined the girl's shocked expression. I felt her sharing condescending and concerned looks with her fellow employees. The silence grew as they mulled the possibility of allowing a blind person access to this forbidden land. She had no choice. She would have to tell me how to get over there. I'd won! Exhilaration swept through me as I waited in breathless anticipation. A victorious smile crept to my lips. My hand tightened on the handle of my dog's harness. We would soon be going over there. The clerk's voice reeked with resignation as the decision was made. That way, she said. No!
From out east over there someplace. Is Miss Yvonne Lawrence, and she is going to sing a song for us.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Down the ridge and over the bridge. The ridge is in Philadelphia. Over the bridge brings you into Camden, New Jersey. Oops. Let me get away from you. I just want to say, you know, coming to the conference every year is just a pleasure.
You need to get a little closer
in. Coming to the conference every year is just a pleasure. And because of our Lord, we're able to get here, each and every one of us, no matter whether we came by transportation on the ground or in the air, or however we got here. Maybe you had your private plane or helicopter bring you, but that's okay too. What I'm about to sing is, what without God, we could do nothing. So that's what I'm going to try to sing for you this evening. Without God, I could do nothing. Without Him, I would fail. Without Him, my life would be rugged like a ship without a sail. Without a doubt, He is my Savior, my strength along life's way. In deep water, He is my anchor. Through faith, He'll be my stay. Without God, I could do nothing. Without Him, I would fail. Without Him, life would be rugged like a ship without a sail. I'm leaning and depending on Jesus. I'm trusting and I know He cares. I'm waiting, just waiting for my Savior. I know He'll dry all my tears. Without God, I could do nothing. Without Him, I would fail. Without Him, my life would be rugged like a ship without a sail. My soul is anchored in Jesus. Though storms and billows may roll, Satan has so many temptations. God's the captain of my soul. Without God, I could do nothing. Without Him, I would fail. Hallelujah. Without Him, my life would be rugged like a ship without a sail. God bless you.
Thank you, Yvonne. Okay, now we're going to hear from our birthday guy from yesterday. Bud Alexander is going to sing and he's going to whistle. Not in the same song, two songs. And I don't know which one he's going to do first. And that's between him and Bob. To figure out, and the rest of us to find out. Bud is from Denton, Illinois.
Thank you. Don't do me like you did last time. It's a rock. Number two. Number two. Two. Yeah. From Galilee, carpenter by trade, came to build his father's church on plans they had made. His destiny was Calvary, his mission was not failed. He would be his church on a ragged cross and three old rusty nails. His church is still standing, it will never fall. He will stand this foundation and faithful in the world. He built his church on a rugged cross and three old rusty nails. Bricks and stones themselves alone on everything it says. To build a church that will ever strong, the world begins to shake. The poor may bear his body torn, but it will be so frail. There to this earth of Jesus, you're walking there. I know that this church is standing, and it will end. Let's stand its foundation to faith will help its way. In the world they come against it, they will not prevail. He built his faith on a cross and he arrived in hell. Well, he built his church on a rugged cross and
put on Anthony Burger,
yeah, he's got a switch CD.
Oh, is that one?
We have a few veterans in this organization, and I'm one, and I think Jack Kinley and Bill McPherson. So I'm going to do a little medley of the armed forces. Number 7. Okay. We'll see if he gets it right.
Number 7, dear. It just takes a minute to switch to the
to that one anyway. Number 7.
What's the name of the song?
It's Armed Forces.
Armed Forces.
And military.
Armed Forces?
No.
Forces. Forces.
It's a military. Armed Forces. Number 7.
For some reason, it ain't
smart. Don't do that to me, Bob.
No, it's because it's the every time I...
Yeah. I don't think Bob likes me.
I don't think it's Bob. I think it's his computer.
Don't sound good.
Don't you know a military joke, you can tell?
No. I'm not on the joke side. About 2 years and 7 months. I was in
the... So is the Army's fault you don't have leave?
Well, yes, the part of their fault.
Figures.
But I was in the 44th Infantry, 135th Combat Engineering Battalion, Headquarters Company. We made roads and bridges and all that stuff.
See, we all learned something new. Now, I'll bet most of us outside of Bill didn't know that.
But I didn't lose my vision until 68. I went in 51 and got out in 52.
I thought I was only 2 years old then.
I was 19.
I wasn't even.
I don't know, but it's number 7.
Yeah.
Number 7.
Yes, there is. Okay.
That says U.S. Air Force Anchor.
That's it.
That's the one he wants.
Oh, that, well, that's understandable. That's
number seven, should be.
He likes to be.
Okay.
Hit it, Bob.
Yeah, it's fine. He'll get it, though. Yeah.
Talk to me. Let's have some audio.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I actually asked Lorraine if I could do this. I read this for Agnes O'Neill back in 1986 or 87. She handed it to me cold turkey and says, do this.
I can never remember which one.
Well, I just about cold turkey couldn't find it in the house, but we found it. It's called The Diary of Shem. We have no clue who wrote this. And you got to take it with a sense of humor and a sense of seriousness. It's a little bit of both. And since Agnes passed away this year at the age of 95, I thought this would be just something special in Agnes's memory that I would like to do. It's just a little lengthy, so please be patient with the old
page. And the microphone.
Yeah, well, that part. I
don't
really
have that microphone.
Uh-oh, he's taking the mic away from me. This is the Diary of Shem, second month, 10th day of the 600th year. We have been at this for so long. The calluses on my hands are surpassed only by the splinters in my arms and the pain in my back from hauling wood and hammering. I'm so thankful to finally have this big boat built. Everyone thinks my dad is crazy. Sometimes even I think my dad is crazy. But he's not. He has had a real experience with our God. His eyes are too focused. His speaking too confident for it to be anything else. Anyway, there are eight of us who believe that a big flood is coming. My mom, my wife, my brother Ham, my brother Japheth, and my two sister-in-laws, my dad and me. From my earliest days, I've been proud to have a father who is passionately obedient to God. Today, we started loading the animals on the ark. What a job. Things got off to a slow start when we tried to load the turtles first. But it didn't matter because it takes quite a while to get together one pair of all unclean animals and seven pair of all clean animals. We were thankful that elephants are unclean animals. A few more of them would have broken down our ramp. Somehow, I always expected God to hypnotize these animals so they would line up double file and march quietly into the boat. Boy, was I wrong. One more outbreak from those hyenas, and they might have become extinct. Second month, 17th day of the 600th year. Today, we felt the first drops of rain. I couldn't help but think it's the beginning of the end. Maybe, from God's perspective, it's just the end of a beginning. Whatever, I was ready to see some rain. It's been hard being ridiculed all these years. People tell Noah jokes everywhere we go. It's become proverbial to talk about sending someone to the Noah farm. This day began as just a normal day. Mothers were nursing their babies and feeding mushed wheat and goat's milk to their eldest kids. Men were out grazing their flocks and herds. Children exploded outside to hit rocks with sticks. The old men gathered down by the village market to talk and talk and talk. Undoubtedly, they were telling a few Noah jokes. Then it started raining. Lightly at first, then heavier. Right now it's raining camels and dogs out there. I've never seen so much water in my life. It's actually coming down in sheets. It's even a bit scary in here in the Ark. Shortly after the rain began, the door to our boat was shut. I looked around to see the other seven at work. It must have been our God who shut it for us. After we heard the solid thud of the door closing, Japheth's wife mentioned she didn't remember seeing the unicorns on board, but I assured her they were. This day of excitement was one of the worst days of my life. I can't describe what it's like hearing people scream and begging to get in. All around the boat, I hear them pleading. They are scratching and clawing at the door. The noise from the older, corrupt people doesn't disturb me so much, but to hear the babies. I've looked at my father a couple of times, but he just shakes his head, still with that look of resolution in his eyes. Why would God do this? I kept asking my folks. My mother said God was sickened by the wickedness of the earth, a wickedness that might forever pollute all human beings. It's because of his love for people that he's causing this, she said. He wants us to begin again to teach all generations about his care and love. She said God would continue to guide, guard, and direct us. I like the way she put it. I believe I'll teach it to my kids someday. Guide, guard, direct. Anyway, it gives me something to think about. Maybe these times of punishment and discipline are displays of God's love, but I'll confess right now it doesn't seem like it. After 7 days on this ark, I think one thing is going to be fun. I've loved animals ever since I was a boy. My favorite corner is the one with the two elephants, two giraffes, two monkeys, and two rabbits. Third month, 26th day of the 600th year. I haven't been very faithful about riding, but we've just been too busy. This downpour from heaven has lasted 40 days. Now I'm talking about 24-hour periods here. Every day, Ham, Japheth, Father, and I feed all the animals. Can you imagine how long it takes to feed them all? It's a good thing we brought a healthy supply of hay. Even though the rain finally stopped today, who knows how long we'll be in here? My wife, my mom, and my sister-in-laws water the animals and fix our meals. Variety is not their specialty, but I guess I should be glad just to have food. I have another confession to make. I am afraid. I just don't have the faith my dad does. He seems as confident as ever that God is in charge, but I certainly haven't heard God's voice lately. Will the Lord throw me out into the flood? I can't stand the feeling of having doubts. It's terrible to not believe while believing, but I'm coming to think that faith is a way of waiting, not quite knowing everything, never quite hearing or seeing. There is doubt hard on the heels of every hope and some uncertainty in every breath. Oh Lord, help my unbelief. Wipe away my tears of fears as I might be a source of encouragement to my wife. By the way, all the fun is worn off. It was fun for about 48 hours. Now I'd rather tread water every day than finish all my chores on this big zoo. When I was a boy, I loved the smell of animals out in the woods. I must have been smelling the foliage. These animals stink. And they're never quiet. Just about the time the sun goes down, the owls start screeching and the coyotes start howling. At least I still have my favorite corner with the two elephants, two giraffes, two monkeys, and 34 rabbits. Seventh month, 17th day of the 600th year. Good news! Yesterday the waters began to subside. After about 150 days since the rain began, we started going back down. Today the boat actually touched the top of some mountain, confirming our belief that we're not very far above the highest elevation. This happened at a good time. God knew we couldn't take much more. The hay flying in the air, the smell, the restlessness of the animals are taking their toll on crew morale. I hate to complain Old Shem likes to get along with everyone, but my brother Japheth married a very small woman with a very big mouth. That woman has been getting on my nerves for the last month or two. The highlight of my life came 2 days ago. I really had to restrain myself. She was walking behind the donkeys on her way to water the camels, which is quite a chore, but she forgot to let the donkeys know she was coming. And as she went behind them, she scared them. Naturally, they kicked hard, catching her right about the ribs, this sending her tumbling on the floor right on top of the porcupines. Her scream was so loud it scared the skunks, who got so excited they shot her. The noise of all this commotion made the elephants, who were drinking, curious, so they turned around and blew the water in their trunks all over her. May the Lord of Justice forgive me for cherishing that wonderful moment.
She is now a small woman with a large mouth, and this is off, sore ribs, a tender seat, and a very bad odor. I'm glad to report you.
I know.
The tape is...
Oh, don't touch. Okay, sorry.
Oops.
She is now a small woman with a large mouth, sore ribs, a tender seat, and a very bad odor. I'm glad to report that my faith is stronger than ever. My father has been telling stories about some of my ancestors who trusted God, stories I can relate to. He told of Abel, who had offered God the best sacrifice he could. My guess is that the moment we get off this boat, my father will do the same. He talks about Enoch, who is said to have known God
as a man. I didn't touch it. Knew his best friend. I didn't touch it, Robert. I am afraid to. I didn't do it. If it's going to be contrary, it's going to be contrary with me.
Test 1, 2, 3, 4. 5.
4. 20. No radio technicians can't help me.
My guess is that the moment we get off this boat, my father will do the same. He told about Enoch, who is said to have known God as a man, knew his best friend. My dad said God told him straight, took him straight from the earth. Why can't he take Japheth's wife? Today, more than ever, I have enjoyed my special corner with the two elephants, two giraffes, two monkeys, and 568 rabbits. 10th month, first day of the 600th year. Even though we've been perched on this mountain for 2.5 months, it wasn't until today that we could actually see the tops of mountains. No sight has ever looked better. Ham first climbed our makeshift ladder up to the window at the top of the boat and spotted land. Then, of course, we all had to take our turns going up to see. We all had a few comments to make about it, except Japheth's wife, who had many. I have seen the face of my grandmother. I have seen the expression on newborn babies. I have looked at beautiful sunsets and awe-inspiring mountains. I have seen my mother's precious wrinkled face and my wife's cutest smile. But no sight has ever looked better than this little bit of earth. God is still watching over us. He didn't turn the water off and forget. He is faithful. He watches over my sleep and my waking hours. Oh, what a redeemer we have. 11th month, 10th day of the 600th year. If I never see another kangaroo hop, if I never hear the gobble of another turkey, if I never sleep next to a pig again the rest of my life, that's fine with me. I was so glad when Father sent out a couple of birds today to see if the water was low enough for us to get off this floating zoo. The raven didn't come back, and can't say I blame him, but the dove did. It just isn't time yet. Waiting is so hard. It's almost easier when you have no hope. You don't sit around expecting something, but it shouldn't be long. In the meantime, I can share my dreams with my wife over in my special corner. 11th month, 24th day of the 600th year. A glorious day. That silly dove didn't come back empty. 2 weeks ago, and again last week, we sent him out and he returned just as he went. Today, though, he came back with an olive leaf in his mouth. We knew then that the water was really going down because olive trees don't grow at high altitudes. We all began grabbing one another. Believe it or not, I even hugged my brother Japheth's wife. Second month, 27th day of the 601st year. Today we will leave this ark. On one hand, I can't wait to get off, but on the other hand, I will miss the memories. I will never be the same. 1,000 years from now, probably no one will ever know what happened with us, but my sons will know. And if the good Lord allows me to see their children, they will know this marvelous story of deliverance. Over a year ago, we boarded this boat. At that time, I could only see the devastation. God seems so furious, so destructive. Now he seems so loving, so forgiving. Surely he hasn't changed. Maybe I just see some aspects of his nature more clearly now. Leaving this ark will be a big step. Everything is fresh. Everything is new. We are consumed with a love for God. Is it possible that they will ever be sin again? It bothers me that the memories of sin have never been washed away with the flood. One last thing before I go. I can't help wondering if God will flood the earth every few thousand years, just to keep things straight. Maybe there will be more Noahs down through the years. There they go out the door. Two elephants, two giraffes, two monkeys, and 12,844 rabbits. By the way, I can't help noticing a beautiful arc of colors shining in the sky. I wonder if it means anything.
Thank you.
Nope.
Shoot.
Thank you. Copies can be made available if somebody wants.
Oh, boy.
Hello.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Testing 1, 2.
Yeah.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
Nope.
Can you 4, 5, 6.
Nope.
5, 6. 7, 8, 9, 10.
75. No. Give me 75, 75, 75, $1.
So to the short lady.
Okay, it's on now. Okay. We are going from Noah to hearing a little more Jewishness, I guess. Connie Cutler is going to come and sing a song for us. And now, which one is it to turn it off?
Am I off? Yes, I am. All right.
She's going the other way, Mindy.
And Connie is from New York, right?
And she's new.
And she's new. Oh, and Reba's from Colorado. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
No. I am from the beautiful headquarters for the NCCB in Colorado.
Oh, no,
well.
You're from Tampa.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Sure.
No, not me.
New York State. Not New York City.
Hello?
There we go.
Okay.
Got it. I got it. Before I sing my song, I'd like to tell a very quick story about it. Back in 2000, May of 2000, my husband and I had the privilege of visiting the Holy Land with a church group. And on the last day of our, last full day of our tour, we visited the Old Jerusalem. We walked all day long, probably kill me today, but it was hot and I was sweaty and, you know, we were all sweaty. We walked all day long. And we got on the bus to go back to the hotel, and every day someone had taken turns singing. And the pastor said, Connie, it's your turn. I said, you mean now? He said, well, it's as good a time as any, so I sang Al Shaddai. I had spoken to our Jewish guide, and he kind of explained to me what Al Shaddai means, and, you know, all the different attributes of God. Hold on a second. I'm breaking my back. There. Excuse me, does this stand go up at all? Yes, it does. I just did it. Never mind. There we go. Thank you, dear. Thanks. Okay. So I sang Al Shaddai, and somewhere between that trip and later on, the Lord kind of impressed upon me to sing it a cappella from now on. Al Shaddai is on my CD, which I do have a few here if anyone is interested. Forgot to bring them the other night. Sorry. But that's how it came about. I did it a cappella on my CD with just background voices. So we're going to try it here without the background voices. Al Shaddai, Al Shaddai, Al Yana Adonai, age to age you're still the same. By the power of your name, Al Shaddai, Al Shaddai, Al Yana Adonai, I will praise and lift you high, Al Shaddai. Through your love and through the ram, you saved the son of Abraham. By the power of your hand, you turned the sea into dry land. To the outcast on her knees, you were the God who really sees. And by your might, you set your children free. Al Shaddai, Al Shaddai, Al Yana Adonai, age to age, you're still the same. By the power of your name, Al Shaddai, Al Shaddai, Er Kankana Adonai, I will praise and lift you high, Al Shaddai. Through the years you made it clear that the time of Christ is near. Though the people couldn't see what Messiah ought to be, though your word contained a plan they just could not understand, your most awesome work was done in the frailty of your son. Al Shaddai, Al Shaddai, Al Yana Adonai, age to age you're still the same. By the power of your name, Al Shaddai, Al Shaddai, Er Kankana Adonai, I will praise you till I die. Al Shaddai, Al Shaddai, Al Shaddai, Al Yana Adonai, Age to age, you're still the same. By the power of your name, Al Shaddai, Al Shaddai, Er Kankana Adonai, I will praise you till I die, Al Shaddai. God bless.
Thank you, Connie. And we have another person here from New York. Miss Evelyn Larson has a poem, and she wouldn't tell me what it was. I didn't ask. She just said, you got to wait till Tuesday to find out. So here's Evelyn.
Oh, good. Okay. Am I set?
We need to move the mic up just a little bit.
Oh. Yeah, I'm a little one. I've been wanting to do this for 3 years. And for 3 years, I forget to bring the copy with me. And finally this year, I did. This is a poem I want to dedicate to Bob Green, and I hope he's in the audience. Are you here, Bob?
No.
Oh, good, okay. This is a poem I want to dedicate to you. It was written in 1888 by Ernest L. Thayer, and it's kind of a baseball immortal. The New York Times publishes it every year at the beginning of the season. I suppose other papers do too. And it reads, the outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 4-2 with but one inning more to play. And then when Cooney died at first and Bowers did the same, a cyclic silence fell upon the patrons of the game. A struggling few got up to go in deep despair. The rest clung to the hope which springs eternal in the human breast. They thought if only Casey could be but get a whack at that, we'd put up even money now with Casey at the bat. Flynn preceded Casey, as did also Jimmy Blake, and the former was a Lulu and the latter was a cake. Page going here. Come on. So upon that sticking multitude, grim melancholy sat, for there seemed but little chance of Casey's getting to the bat. But Flynn let drive a single to the wonderment of all, and Blake, the much despised, tore the cover off the ball, and when the dust had lifted and they saw what had occurred, there was Jimmy safe at second and Flynn a hugging third. Then from 5,000 throats and more, they rose a lusty yell. It rumbled through the valley, it rattled in the dell, and knocked upon the mountain and recoiled upon the flat. For Casey, mighty Casey, was advancing to the bat. There was ease in Casey's manner as he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing and a smile upon Casey's face. And when responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat. No stranger in the crowd could doubt 'twas Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 5,000 tongues applauded when he wiped them on his shirt. Then while the wreathing pitcher ground the ball into his hip, defiance gleamed in Casey's eye, a sneer curled Casey's lip. And now the leather-covered spear came hurtling through the air, and Casey stood watching it in haughty grandeur there. Close to the sturdy batman, the ball unheated spit. That ain't my style, said Casey. Strike one, the umpire said. From the benches, black with people, there went up a muffled roar, like the beating of the storm waves on a stern and distant shore. Kill him! Kill him! Kill the umpire! Shouted someone on the stand, in the stand, and it's likely they'd have killed him had not Casey raised his hand. With a smile of Christian charity, great Casey's visage shone. He stilled the rising tumult. He bade the game go on. He signaled to the pitcher, and once more the spheroids flew, but Casey still ignored it, and the umpire said, strike two! Fraud, cried the maddened thousands, and echoed answered fraud. But once, one full look from Casey, and the audience was awed. They saw his face grow stern and cold. They saw his muscles strain, and they knew that Casey wouldn't let the ball go by again. No, there's no more. The sneer is gone from Casey's lip. His teeth are clenched in hate. He pounds his cool violins, his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball, and now he lets it go, and now the air is shattered by the force of Katie's blow. Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. The band is playing somewhere, and somewhere hearts are light. And somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out.
Evelyn, thank you. You know, like I said, I forgot when she did tell me it was humorous or light or something. But anyway, Diane gets to follow that. Diane Davis is going to come and give us a special song, a cappella. Yeah, a piccolo.
All right, how's that? That sounds good to me. All right. This is by.
No, we don't want this one.
I did that. I'm sorry, guys.
Okay.
I think the mic system wants to go to bed.
Okay, here we go. This is a by request. Were you there when they crucified my Lord? Were you there when they crucified my Lord? Oh, sometimes causes me to tremble. Were you there when they crucified my Lord? Were you there when they nailed him to the tree? Were you there when they nailed him to the tree? Oh, times it causes me to tremble, tremble, tremble. Were you there when they nailed him to the tree? Were you there when they laid him in the tomb? Were you there when they laid him in the tomb? Me to tremble, tremble, tremble. Were you there when they laid him in the tomb? Were you there when he rose up from the grave? Shouting, glory, glory, glory. Were you there when he rose up from the grave? Thank you.
Now we are going to hear from Miss Vivian Williams. And you know, the Lord does do some new things with arranging these things. I didn't know what Diane was going to sing. And, you know, anyway, so now we'll hear from Vivian. And I do know what she's going to sing.
Yeah, I better. Going to say anything or not?
Still not there yet.
Well, I still ask if she's going to say anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm 9 feet tall. Oh, thanks. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me? I guess. Hear my big mouth. I'm a little hoarse, but it's okay. Since the welcoming committee decided to have Christmas in July, I'm going to sing a Christmas song. It's one of my favorite spirituals. Sweet little Jesus boy, they made me born in a manger. Sweet little holy child, we didn't know to save us, Lord, to take our sins away. Our eyes was blind,
they could not see. We didn't know who you was. Long time ago, you was born, born in a manger low. Sweet little Jesus boy, the world treats you mean, Lord, treat me mean too. But that's how things is down here. We didn't know who showed us how ways of trying must you done told us how even when just seems like we can't do right. Look how we treated you. But please, Lord, forgive us. We didn't know it was you. Sweet little Jesus boy, born long time ago.
I get choked up, I'm sorry.
Our final act? No, well, anyway. The final thing we're going to hear tonight is a story from Bob Dunn. He's written some bedtime stories for children about Tommy Raindrop. And we're going to hear Tommy Raindrop.
And those stories should be on the web about 2nd or 3rd of August. I think we'll get them on the web for you.
Finally. All right.
this really happen? It was a warm summer day, and Tommy Raindrop was floating along in a big cloud that was passing over the Atlantic Ocean. Tommy was feeling happy and content and was enjoying the view below. There was a cruise ship making its way to the Azores Islands, and on one deck of the ship was a swimming pool with people in it. Tommy loves children, and swimming pools usually have lots of happy, laughing children. But when he looked closer, he could see no children at all. The pool had only older people, oh, about 20 or so and older. Just old geezers, Tommy thought. He watched that ship until a warm wind from the south blew Tommy's cloud toward the north. Tommy was rather disappointed. He was afraid he would end up in some old iceberg in the North Atlantic and be stuck there for 100 years or so. Tommy was not one to just sit around frozen into a chunk of ice. He had that happen to him once and did not get out of that big berg until a big ship called the Titanic crashed into the iceberg and knocked Tommy loose. Well, as it happened, Tommy did not end up in an iceberg. He fell into a forest in Ireland. He landed on a leaf near the top of an old tree. The wind blew gently, and Tommy got dumped off that leaf, and he fell down lower to another leaf near the ground. Tommy is a really curious little raindrop, and this day he hung on to that lower leaf to see what he could see in the forest. A deer came by and chewed some of the leaves of the tree, and Tommy got shook around a bit, but he hung on tight. He wanted to see a lot more before he fell to the ground, where he would begin his work of keeping that tree alive and helping to grow grass and ferns and stuff. Tommy watched squirrels and chipmunks run around gathering acorns and seeds and stuff and running off to their nests. The critters were busy indeed. They worked hard to gather food for the next winter, even though it was not even close. Tommy knew that it is good to store up food. It does not matter if one is a chipmunk or a person. We must always prepare for times when food is not plentiful. He was watching a chipmunk struggling with a piece of food that was really too big for him to handle when something else caught Tommy's eye. There was a little green man, all dressed in funny green clothes, making his way straight through the dense forest, and he was heading right toward the tree that Tommy was in. The little guy walked right up to the leaf Tommy was on, and he surprised our little hero so much that Tommy nearly fell off the leaf. The little guy actually talked to Tommy and called him by his name. "At last I get to meet the famous Tommy Raindrop," he declared. Now, Tommy was never actually able to talk to a human being, so he did not reply to the little guy. "Och, what's the matter with you, you little drip? Do you think you're too famous to talk with a lowly creature like me? Didn't the boss teach you anything about humility? Are you too stuck up to speak with a lowly leprechaun?" the little guy went on. Well, Tommy was really confused and hurt and humiliated and surprised all at the same time. But he did manage to say, "Hi." "Well, now, that's a little better. But I've heard that you've been all around the earth many, many times and have helped a lot of people and animals and birds and even bugs. And all you can manage to say to me is hi?" Tommy looked around him to see if anyone else was there to hear him and see him actually talking to this strange character. When he saw no one, he said, "Hey, I really am sorry, dude. I've never in my life been able to talk to anything other than other raindrops, and of course the boss. You surprised me so much I can hardly speak at all." "Aye, then, you've never met a leprechaun before, have you? Well, now you have. We leprechauns have a nasty reputation as little mischief makers. We like to tease greedy people by showing them our pot of gold and then suddenly taking it away from them. Their greedy brooks have been trying to steal our gold for hundreds of years, but no one's ever been able to steal even an ounce. Of course, we leprechauns have no need of gold, but we sure enjoy teasing the people. Well, now, that's not a very nice thing to do, Tommy replied. Do you know how much trouble a person can get into when he goes home and tells his wife about you and your gold? Many a man has had to sleep in the doghouse because his wife accused him of telling tall tales. Ah, now, Tommy, I've heard of times when you played tricks on the people. How about the time you messed up a snooty little girl's birthday party? The leprechaun replied. Then Tommy had to laugh. Yes, I do remember that. She was a real snooty little girl who thought she was something special because her father was rich. She needed a lesson, and I taught it to her. She became a really fine woman and friendly to everyone after that day. Well, that's what I do, too. I teach the people not to be so greedy and try to get rich without working for it, the leprechaun said. I guess we're even, said Tommy. But how can we talk together? I've never been able to talk to people. I often wish I could so I can make their life easier and help them in many ways by simply telling them how to find water or get out of a jam or something. I always have to find some tricky way to teach them anything. Do you live in this forest all the time? Do you have a house here? Do you have a wife? Does the boss know you're here? Oh, hold on, Tommy. You ask too many questions at once. We can talk together because we have special powers that no one else has. We leprechauns use tricks to teach people, too. Boy, I remember one greedy old geezer. I had to use every trick in the book to get that guy out of my pot of gold. I could have just made the gold disappear, but this nut jumped into the pot and burrowed his way to the bottom and was chewing on gold pieces. If I made it disappear, he would have disappeared too. I have no wife or home. I don't need either one. I live anywhere I want to. And yes, the boss always knows where I am. I speak with him often, just like you. Tommy, we work for him too. In fact, did you hear that? He's telling us both to get to work. Tommy, very surprised, said, yes, I did hear that too. Let's get to work. I hope to meet you again sometime. We can exchange more stories. A hard breeze shook the leaf Tommy was on, and he fell off and landed on a blade of grass, then slid down its roots to help it grow. The leprechaun just disappeared. Tommy never met another leprechaun, and he has a hard time believing that this one meeting ever happened. But then how would he know about that greedy guy in a pot of gold? Time for bed, kids. Sleep tight. I love you, Grandpa.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, everybody. This concludes our challenge time, and thank you all for your participation and your patience, and good night. Thanks to Mindy and to David.
You're welcome.